So have you ever had a salad of dandelion greens? While some of us deal with an overabundance of dandelions in our yards, some of you just eat them. We will talk about eating dandelions and dozens of other edible wild plants this hour with a Wisconsin forager, an expert in edible plants, and we will find out how to identify, harvest, and prepare a feast from nature's garden. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Friday, April the 13th. That's right, it's Friday the 13th, but we are very lucky to have with us today a great guest who will talk with us about what's available to eat in your own backyard, your urban neighborhood, or your rural backwoods during this time of year, and throughout the spring and summer for that matter. How about a fiddlehead fern, or a ramp, or a cup of nettle tea? Anyone find any morel mushrooms yet? Not that you would have to tell us where. Join in with your favorite foods from the wild and your questions about how to find them and make them delicious at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Sam Thayer. He's an expert in edible plants, also a maple syrup producer, a wild rice harvester, an owner of an organic orchard, and he's the author of The Forager's Harvest, a guide to identifying, harvesting, and preparing edible wild plants, and Nature's Garden. His website is foragersharvest.com, and we have that linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. He joins us from his home in Birchwood, Wisconsin, in northwestern Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
It's nice to have you with us. I know that you have been on with my colleague Larry Mueller in the past, and we were fortunate to find copies of your books in his office, and so I have them in my hand right now. I'm still considering whether I'm going to put them back. Anyway, so you got started foraging quite early, didn't you?
You know, I don't ever remember getting started. I always remember foraging. I remember when I was very, very little, my older brother and sister showing me wood sorrel in the yard, and this is a plant that lots of little kids eat, and I'm sure that many listeners grew up calling it sour grass. Sometimes people call it sour clover, and that was the first plant I remember collecting, but any time I learned about free food as a child, I remembered it.
You were curious, or were you hungry?
I was both. Uh-huh. You know, I remember I took a fairly long walk to school in junior high, and I'd get bored, and I'd start looking at the vegetation I was passing, and I would keep my eye out for the few plants I knew, and I'd pick a thistle leaf, and I would pluck all the thorns off of it, which once you do, the thistle leaf becomes a little bit like celery, and I would eat those on a daily basis on the way to and from school.
You were really brave, too. but, you know, I remember eating sweet clover, like biting off the little nub of the sweet clover, or, you know, little purple flowers, but not a sour clover. Boy, I guess I just don't eat. And what did that taste like?
Well, it has a very rhubarb-like flavor.
Uh-huh.
And there seems to be, there seems to be a small number of plants, and nobody really knows how children learn that they're edible and teach other children that they're edible. And so that wood sorrel is one of them, and wild grape tendrils, the little clasping part of the grapevine, and then the other one is sheep sorrel, which also all three of those plants have that sour flavor that kids are really attracted to.
Neat. Well, you know, I also remember, though, my mom saying, don't eat this and don't eat that, and watch out for those little red berries. They're poisonous. So I think she might have put a damper on my exploring the backyard to eat.
Well, you know, it is definitely good to be cautious, and I had a mother like that, too. We had a large pin cherry tree in our yard where I grew up, and I was always told that those cherries were poisonous and don't touch them. I never tasted them. It wasn't until I was probably 16 years old that I read the pin cherries were edible, and I thought, I was missing out for all those years. I mean, definitely the first rule of foraging is you only eat something when you know what it is and you know that it's safe.
Yeah.
And that's something that I followed even when I was very little. I mean, people have a pretty good sense of self-preservation. The danger associated with eating the wrong plant is somewhat overblown.
Yeah, and that goes for mushrooms, I suppose, especially. Is that overblown, too?
Well, there are a lot more mushroom poisonings than plant poisonings. But generally because there are more people who believe you can eat a mushroom without identifying it. When you actually look into the case history of a mushroom or plant poisoning, it is almost invariably caused because somebody believed they could eat a mushroom or plant without knowing what it is. And that seems incredibly ridiculous, and yet that's how most of those poisonings occur. So as long as you keep in mind that you only eat a mushroom or a plant when you're positive of its identification, you really don't have a lot to worry about. When people are being reasonable and mature and cautious, they tend to make good decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of mushrooms, one of the prompts for this program was that we saw a couple of blog postings with the especially warm weather that we were having earlier this spring, that somebody had already discovered morels. And I think that's died down a bit now, and also now it's very, very dry. People are saying that they're not finding them because it's so dry. But are there any morels out there?
I haven't found any yet, but I have heard reports, and I have no reason to think otherwise. I see in southern Wisconsin, the red oaks and the black oaks have started to flower, and I usually use that as an indicator that morels are going to start popping up. I agree. Once we get a rain and we get a few more warm nights, I think we're going to get morels coming up in full force. And they've been about 3 to 5 weeks earlier than normal this year. And so it's no surprise to get morels already.
Yeah, those are considered a real prize, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm. Morels are great for people that like mushrooms, which is a lot of people. And one thing about morels is they're really the only good mushroom that comes out this time of year. There's a lot of good mushrooms in late summer and fall, but if you want to pick mushrooms in the spring, morels is it.
And all you do with a morel to make it great is sauté it in a little butter, and that's all you have to do?
That's all I do generally. I've done a few other things, but it's so easy to make them good.
Mm-hmm. And so besides maybe some early morels, what else might we forage for at this time of year?
Well, the great thing about foraging is that there's so many early vegetables. So we're just planting the garden now. There's nothing in our garden, but there is just a smorgasbord of wild greens to collect. And one thing that I picked a few days ago that I really like in early spring is something called shepherd's purse. And this is a plant that illustrates one of the lessons of foraging, that you really need to know the right time and the right stage to get something and have it good. Shepherd's purse is a common weed in lawns, gardens, agricultural fields, the crack in the sidewalk. And it's in the mustard family, but it's the mildest flavored green of any mustard type green. And it's just sautéed very briefly or steamed. It's just fantastic. But you want to get the tender shoot when it's first coming up before the flower buds open, and which would be right now.
And this is a common weed that I'd find in the crack in the driveway.
Yeah, I doubt you'd have to go more than 100 steps from your front door to find one.
Oh my gosh! Well, you know what? I'm going to ask Bill from time to time if he can find photographs of some of these things we're talking about and maybe put them on our Facebook page. I'm sure they're in your book as well. And maybe they're on your own. Are they on your website?
I don't have I don't have pictures of shepherd's purse on the website. I have there are some other good sites to go to find the plants. Actually, we have the University of Wisconsin Herbarium site. You can find a photograph of almost any plant in the state.
Okay. All right. Great. That sounds good. So shepherd's purse. I mean, let's make a little salad of greens or something. What else is out there?
Well, another thing that's not available everywhere in the state, but really common in some parts, is wild leek or ramp.
Oh yeah.
And so they are in their prime right now. And they are enjoying our spring kind of in suspended animation because they have a short growing season. They grow after the ground thaws, but before the leaves come out on the canopy trees. So they have about usually a 5-week growing season, but I think they're going to have a 9-week growing season this year.
Yeah, and I did. That was another prompt for this program is that we saw something, especially it was Door County ramps were out and about, and people were, they taste like a little garlicky, don't they?
Yeah, they're stronger than a cultivated leek, for sure. Not as strong as garlic. And some people find the garlic flavor just a little too strong. But we also have a few other wild onions growing in the state. In the southern part of the state, where the wild leeks aren't as common, there is something called wild garlic in the field guides, but it's actually closer related to the onions. And it's a small onion-like plant that is usually in low ground, not swampy ground, but just kind of low, real rich soil woods. And when I lived in Madison in high school, I would collect that quite often in the woods near Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And that's there's all over North America. In fact, there's a whole set of maybe 30 or so species of wild onions.
I'm just trying to think of that invasive plant, garlic mustard.
Garlic mustard.
Yeah.
Now is prime time for garlic mustard. You know, garlic mustard leaves have a pungent, garlicky, and mustard green flavor. And a lot of people find that too strong, although some people make pesto out of it that I think is really good. But what I like on garlic mustard is that shoot, that stem, before the flowers open up, so right about now, and of course you can get rid of it out of your woodlot while you collect some vegetables, and I think it's great in a salad. It's also good in soup because the stems are asparagus-like in texture, certainly not in flavor, but when you chop them up, they make a real nice steamed vegetable or stir-fried vegetable, just a real good a versatile vegetable. And the stems, and this is a common theme with plants, and the same with the shepherd's purse, the stem is much milder than the leaf.
Okay, sounds good. We are talking with Sam Thayer. He is the author of a couple of books on foraging. The Forager's Harvest, A Guide to Identifying, Harvesting, and Preparing Edible Wild Plants, and Nature's Garden. And we are talking about foraging, talking about some of the edible wild plants that are maybe in your own driveway, as we've just talked about, your own backyard, or in the woods and fields of rural Wisconsin. And we're wondering if you have any questions about this, or if you are a fan of foraging for some of your own food. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today. There is a dense fog advisory posted for Sheboygan and Ozaukee counties until 9 o'clock this morning. Also, strong to severe thunderstorms are possible tomorrow and tomorrow afternoon in southern Wisconsin with large hail and damaging winds possible. That's tomorrow. Today, though, cloudy with periods of scattered rain. Highs today will be in the 50s and 60s. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with John Munson in for Ben Marins today. And after 4, it's a look at the news that's been in the week that was. It's your views on the news between 4 and 5 this afternoon. You can call in and talk about what you consider the week's most significant or important news story. We'll also be reviewing all the top state and national news stories of the week in our regular Friday Week in Review from 8 until 9 this morning. Right now, we are having some fun foraging for food, whether you prefer ramps or wild lakes, dandelion greens or root vegetables. It's a great time of year to enjoy Wisconsin's natural edible plants. And we are talking about these and other items that are ripe for the picking, where to find them and how to prepare them. And we're welcoming your questions, too. Maybe your favorite wild foods. Any good finds recently? How about morel mushrooms? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We are talking with edible plant expert Sam Thayer this hour. Susan in Bristol is our first caller. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I have two questions, and one of them involves morel mushrooms because I love them, but I've never gone and harvested them myself, and I don't know what the best place is to find them. I live in a wooded area, so I'm thinking they're probably someplace around here.
Okay, so where should she hunt for morels, Sam?
Well, you know, they have a habit of you stumble across them when you're not looking for them, but if you're going to go out and seek them, there's some particular plant associations to look for. One is dead elm trees, particularly elm trees that have been dead for only a few years, so the bark is still clinging to them. Another thing to look for is dead butternut trees, which there's a lot of in some areas of the state because there's a disease that's been killing them all off. Stands of white ash. I seem to find them most often in dense young stands of white ash, but sometimes also in older stands of white ash. And then the last thing that I consistently find them under is abandoned apple orchards or under old dead apple trees. So that's where I would start, and I would say,
okay,
don't look in river
floods. I've got a dead plum tree. Do you think there might be any coming up there?
Well, you could find one anywhere, in each of these locations, you might get morels just once a year. So there might be a 5-week window where their morels might grow, but they're going to grow up and die and then get eaten by a deer or maybe a trespasser, or, you know, they're going to disappear in a week or so. So you don't know exactly when they're going to pop up. But those are the most common associations. And they like well-drained soil. They like sandy soil or soil that's built out of limestone, not as common in far northern Wisconsin and not as common on clay or in river floodplains.
Okay, and I've got a pine forest like very near me here. And is there any chances? I know there's puffballs and you can eat those that grow in there.
Well,
would morels grow in there too?
There's a chance of finding morels. I mean, I have picked morels in red pine plantations before, although under red pine is where you're more likely to find false morels, which are generally not eaten. But there are lots of other mushrooms later in the summer that will pop up in any type of forest. The list is quite long. And so I'd say we have at least 40 or 50 good kinds of mushrooms to collect. But morels are near the top.
And Susan, you had another question?
Yes, it was ramps. I heard about them on the TV Food Network and stuff like that, and I heard you talk about them. What do they look like? How could I identify them? I've never had one, and I would love to try one.
Well, they grow usually in thick clumps, and they have a long, broad leaf. And I don't like to identify plants over the radio, but this one is pretty easy to tell because it's, if you break the leaf, it's got a strong onion-like flavor. It's a lily-like leaf. It doesn't look like, it doesn't have that hollow tubular leaf like most cultivated onions. And you'll find them generally in forests that are dominated by sugar maple.
And we will, Susan, post a photo, a picture of ramps on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, too, if you want to take a look at that. We have other calls, and we're coming up on news, so let me go to Penny in Madison. Hello, Penny.
Hello.
Yes, and you have a question?
I've got lots of fiddlehead ferns, I think. in my yard, and I wanted to find out how tall those little heads can stick up and they're still worth picking to eat.
And the fiddlehead fern is, again, I'm asking you to identify it a little bit, Sam, but it is a little spiral on the top of a fern.
Right, and almost all of our ferns start out as a fiddlehead. So it's confusing when people say fiddlehead fern because there's many kinds of fern fiddleheads. The one that is generally sought as food is ostrich fern. That one is easy to identify because it's our only fern that grows in clumps and has that very deep groove or channel running down the length of the stalk, like the groove in a celery stalk. And that's fairly unmistakable. And you can eat the fiddleheads and the tender stalk as long as the top is coiled. So I prefer not to pick them when they first come up and they're 4 or 5 inches high and basically all you get is the little curled fiddlehead. I like when you get about 8 or 12 inches of stem and the coiled fiddlehead. I think the stem is better than the coiled part, but the coiled part looks so neat. People like to use it in their food.
So how do you, we have just a minute before news, what's a way to eat the fiddlehead?
Well, you know, commonly fiddleheads are served just like asparagus. They're just steamed and maybe served with a little butter and salt. But basically anything that's done with asparagus is done with fiddleheads.
Sounds good. And I happen to know there is a picture of a fiddlehead on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, too. We will continue talking about foraging for wild edible plants after we check the latest news. And we're going to have a Wisconsin Life episode on nettles. And we'll talk a little bit more about nettles after that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Friday, April the 13th. We will continue talking about edible plants with Sam Thayer in just a few minutes and welcome your questions and comments and favorites. But first, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Nettles are abundant in the spring, as many of us learn the hard way after a painful sting. But if you look past the burning, you'll find a delicious and nutritious plant. Commentator Patricia Monahan tells us of her own conversion to nettles.
If you don't have your nettles in spring, you're not right all year. That's what Eamon, my husband Michael's cousin in County Tipperary, says. Michael used to repeat that to me every spring. I responded by shuddering and shaking my head. Eat stinging nettles? One touch of a leaf and I break out in fierce red welts. Why would I want that traveling down my throat? Have you ever experienced a nettle sting? It's like an electroshock to an open wound. Brush your hand against a nettle while weeding, and within a minute you've got an unabridged dictionary of nasty sensations going on. The Latin name for nettles is urtica dioica, the first word coming from urare, to burn. The painful reactions come from microscopic hairs that cover the plant's stems, which cause minute punctures into which the plant pours irritating chemicals. It seems right to me that nettle leaves look like arrows. They pierce. They sting. They hurt. But Rudolf Steiner, whose doctrine of signatures claimed that a plant's shape symbolized its use, would have disagreed. He saw a heart shape in nettle leaves and called the plant the world's heart because it strengthens anything growing nearby. But nettle leaves flash me a green warning that says, "Come near and I will hurt you." I was not about to eat them. But finally I agreed to taste Michael's annual kettle of nettle soup. Just to taste. So Michael put on a long-sleeved shirt and gloves and took basket and scissors out to the nettle patch. He cut off the youngest tops and, still with gloves on, dumped them in boiling water for about 5 minutes. Then he pulled out his heritage recipe. The fact that it used oatmeal as a thickener made it charmingly ethnic, but I was fairly certain that one spoonful would be all that I could manage. I didn't actually taste that first spoonful. I swallowed it as fast as I could, then sat with my fingers wrapped tight. tightly around a glass of water in case the burning began. After a few moments, I realized that cooked nettles do, indeed, lose their sting. So I took another spoonful. This time I was surprised at the rich green flavor, rather like spinach crossed with kale. Nettles, I discovered, are delicious. One bowl of Irish nettle soup made a convert out of me. I started looking for nettle recipes, using nettles in place of other greens, and experimenting with various ways to prepare nettles. I took pasta with nettle pesto to a neighborhood potluck, where it disappeared quickly. When I told people that the dish was made of nettles, more than one said, "If I'd have known that, I would never have touched it." My sentiments exactly, until that first bowl of nettle soup changed my mind.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Ann Strainchamps and Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from the Mead Witter Foundation of Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin. For more information and for Patricia's recipe for nettle soup, you can visit our website at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk about foraging for nettles and many other edible plants with Sam Thayer. He is the author of The Forager's Harvest, a guide to identifying, harvesting, and preparing edible wild plants and nature's garden. And he will answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And Bill Martins has been posting many of the edible plants that we have been talking about on Facebook, so you can take a look at them to try to identify them. And I know he has posted a picture of nettles most recently. Sam Thayer, do you like nettles?
Well, I had some yesterday and the day before, but not yet today.
Oh, you have them that often, huh?
This time of year, yeah, I would say probably four times a week. I love nettles, and I always steam them with just a little bit of water, and I'll save that steaming water and drink that as a tea with a little bit of maple syrup or honey in it.
Really? I've heard about nettle tea, and that's how you do it. You just boil the nettle in the water, and that's the tea?
Yep, it's very simple, and you know, you can dry the leaves to use for the tea, but it definitely tastes better when you use fresh green leaves.
Yeah, and have you ever been stung by a nettle?
Oh, yeah, many times. In fact, at this point, it's like when you pick blackberries, you forgive the thorns.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I'm so used to the nettle sting, I don't try to get stung. In fact, I try not to, but I get a sting every now and then. I don't worry about it anymore.
Al in Stoughton has a question about nettles. Hi, Al.
Well, I think you already answered it, but can I get you to shift gears and maybe tell me a little about using cattails?
Yes, but I also do. I wanted to, and I'm sorry we stole your thunder, Al. But how do you actually go about harvesting the nettle, Sam?
Well, you know, stinging nettles have variable stinging capacity. The richer the soil, the more they sting, and the more sun, the more they sting. So occasionally, I'll just pick them with bare hands if they're in a shady area because they can't sting me through the pads on my fingers. This depends on what your fingers do most of the time. But you can always just wear gloves and just a pair of scissors and snip the plants about 6 or 4 inches down from the top, and just gingerly put them into a bag, carefully drop them into something to steam them, and then a few, 30 seconds of heat, and they have no stinging capacity. So, you know, just wear gloves and be careful.
Mm-hmm.
The most common place to get stung is on your wrist, not on your fingers. Your wrist, where your skin is very, you know, tender and thin.
And then you can make soups and teas and all sorts of things with the nettle. And what about a cattail?
Well, cattail is a great plant because it provides something literally at any time of the year. So this time of year, the cattail is sending up its new shoot, and what I would do is they're going to be poking out of the mud right now. You can break them off at the base, and you want to peel the outer layer of that shoot, and it's like a cluster of leaves. The outer leaves will be tough, but the inner leaves will be tender and kind of a off-white or whitish, and they'll kind of slowly grade into green. But you get the feel for how to peel it so that you only get the tender part, it's a nice vegetable, but for a lot of people, it irritates their throat. It gives them a tickle in the back of their throat if they eat it raw. So I recommend generally to cook it. But it's a very mild vegetable. And that seems to be the theme with all the cattail vegetables. They're all very mild. Later in the spring and in early summer, you can get this lateral shoot that's actually growing sideways in the mud that's going to form a new plant. And that is the best part of the cattail, in my opinion. It's almost like a long white dagger, but it tastes like a sweet cucumber.
Oh, sounds great. Al, I'm sorry, did you have anything else?
No, it's just, nettles and cattails have fascinating histories, and I guess anything I can learn in addition is appreciated.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much, Al. We have Kyle in Richland Center with us next. Hello, Kyle.
Yes, hi. Do I understand correctly that Canadian thistle is related to the artichoke?
Yes, artichoke is closely related to the thistles, and basically an artichoke is a thistle that's grown to have a massive flower head, and it's not as thorny as the wild thistles, but all of the thistles have edible parts, and plants often choose between either physical armor or chemical armor. So both nettles and thistles that are well endowed with physical armor, they are very mild and very edible plants if you can get rid of that armor. So we have a number of wild thistles, including the Canada thistle, which Canada thistle is my least favorite thistle for food because it's so small, the parts aren't really worth dealing with. But a bull thistle, when you get a nice tender stalk in early summer, you can... I like to chop off all the leaves and peel it while it's standing with a fillet knife so I don't have to touch it, and then cut it at the base and peel off the outer skin of the thistle stalk, and it's a very nice, very mild vegetable.
A bull thistle.
Bull thistle. And in fact, I mean, we have two common native thistles. If you're in Richland Center area, you have pasture thistle and another one called tall thistle. They're both native, and they both have a silvery white leaf when you flip that leaf over. They both have a nice edible stalk also, but they also have good edible roots.
Okay, Val.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Speaking of artichokes, my parents for a while were on a Jerusalem artichoke kick. They were growing them in their garden. Those are wild? I can find those in the wild?
Yeah, they're very common in the wild, especially in the southern half of the state, but they're found throughout the state. And the cultivated varieties have larger tubers than the wild ones.
Mm-hmm.
The wild ones tend to have an elongated tuber, but I think the wild ones often taste better. They're kind of like potatoes, but they almost are like already have this buttery, silky texture. And you find them on roadsides, in ditches, the edges of fields, and their natural habitat is river floodplains. And they're easiest to locate in late August and September when they're flowering, and then you can remember those patches and come back in October and November when the roots are ready to harvest, or the following spring if you can remember where the patch is.
Are the wild asparagus patches popping up yet?
You know, I don't think quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Usually about the same time as the peak of morel season, when the leaves are starting to open on the oak trees, that's when the asparagus comes up. It likes it when the day temperatures are 70 and above and the night temperatures are usually 50 and above, and then the wild asparagus will start to pop up.
Yeah, we have had colder nights than that lately, that's for sure. Let's see what our weather forecast is calling for now. Today, there's going to be patchy fog in Sheboygan and Ozaukee counties. There's actually a dense fog advisory until 9 o'clock this morning for those counties, Sheboygan and Ozaukee. Otherwise, statewide today, cloudy with periods of scattered rain. Most highs will be in the 50s to low 60s today, so not back into the 70s yet. Tonight, there is a chance of rain and possibly severe thunderstorms tonight, or tomorrow and tomorrow afternoon in southern Wisconsin. Large hail and damaging winds are possible with these storms tomorrow and tomorrow afternoon in southern Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
I've been to Allen's Grove, Emerald Grove, Cedar Grove, Union Grove, Soldiers Grove, Hales Corners, Lades Corners, Abel's Corners, Newburgh Corners, Pipersville, Pittsville, Deansville, Deansville, Reeseville, Janesville, Platteville, Orphanville, Fortville, Blatchville, Plainville, Plain, Plainfield, Nutterville, Butternut. I've been over there.
Tell Joy where to forage edible plants. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 10 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Friday, April the 13th. This is the segment of the show each week where we do talk about things that are special about Wisconsin and Wisconsin culture and Wisconsin life. And one thing that is special in Wisconsin this time of year, and for that matter throughout the year, is foraging in Wisconsin for edible plants. We're talking about foraging things, everything from wild leeks to dandelion greens to mushrooms to, oh boy, we talked about nettle and fiddleheads and many other wild foods with Sam Thayer, who is an expert in edible plants. He is the author of The Forager's Harvest, A Guide to Identifying, Harvesting, and Preparing Edible Wild Plants and Nature's Garden. We have provided a link to his website, foragersharvest.com, on our website and the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Bill Martins has also been posting a lot of photos of the wild plants that we have been talking about during this program, so you can identify them. Well, when you're on Facebook, you can also take a look at this week's Where in Wisconsin is the WPR Magnet photo, and post your guess as to where the WPR magnet is this week. We will randomly choose a winner from all of the correct answers at the end of the program today and send the winner your very own WPR magnet. Let's take some more calls. Next we go to Mike in Oshkosh. Hello, Mike.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Just a quick question. I take milk thistle for a liver, like fatty liver, and I was just wondering, I have it growing all over the yard, and I was just wondering if there's any way to, extract that beneficial component that it has.
Milk thistle?
You know, I'm not sure about that. Milk thistle doesn't grow wild in Wisconsin. I have found it growing wild on the West Coast in Washington, but so as far as the medicinal property and how you would extract that and use it, I'm really not familiar.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that, Mike. Good luck to you. Matt in Hayward is with us now. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I was going to ask. I've been looking for hopness vines. I'm up in the Hayward area, and I've come up with a big goose egg. I was wondering if I was a bit north.
No. Hayward area, they're not extremely abundant like they are in Eau Claire. And just for the listeners, he's talking about hopness, which is also called groundnut, not to be confused with peanuts. This is a native vine in the pea family with an edible tuber that was a staple food for native peoples all over eastern North America. And there are many lakes in the Hayward area that have it. And I can give you a place where you can find this vine, not really close to Hayward, but off the top of my head, if you go to the boat landing on Long Lake near Siren on the north end of the lake. There's a whole bunch of it at that boat landing, and then you can get an idea what the vine looks like, and you should be able to find it closer to home. But what it likes is sandy soil, but rich and somewhat moist. And it kind of depends which direction you go from Hayward. If you go west of Hayward and southwest, you're fairly likely to find it towards Trigo.
I'm right there.
Okay. It's once you see it, you'll start to see it more. And it's not extremely abundant around Hayward, but there's patches of it all over that area of the state. But if you want to see the vine for sure, another place is the boat landing on the north end of Bear Lake, the Bear Lake that's between Rice Lake and Spooner. So those are two places you can go to see the plant.
Oh, thanks.
And what do you do with that? How do you prepare that?
You know, it's just a starchy root vegetable that you would use in a pot roast or a stew like potatoes. And traditionally, the Ojibwa used it in stews or things where it was cooked for a long time, often just cooked with meat or cooked with wild rice in a stew because it complements the protein in wild rice to make a complete protein. And it's just a... It's almost like a cross between a boiled potato and boiled peanuts in flavor.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it is good, and it can be really found in great quantity sometimes. I mean, I've seen places where there's literally thousands of pounds of it on a hillside.
Well, happy foraging, Matt. Hope you find some. Speaking of wild rice, you are a wild rice harvester as well.
Yeah, I started harvesting about 16, 17 years ago. And I realized that I loved doing it. I just absolutely loved it. And so I started harvesting lots and lots of rice, and then I thought, well, this is more than I can eat after a few years, and I started to get better at it. And so I started to sell to a few of the co-ops and things around the state. And
this is rice that it's grown in like, bogs or wet areas?
It grows in shallow sections of lakes and rivers. Mm-hmm. Usually it needs a lake with some water flow and usually muck over a gravel or silt bottom. And there's wild rice throughout the state, but it's most common in northwestern and north central Wisconsin. And
is this something that you can harvest as a, I don't know, a layperson?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's $8.25 to get a license to harvest. And it's good to go with somebody that knows how to. It's, you know, it's a fairly complicated skill, and you know there's not, I don't know, there's several hundred harvesters in the state, most people just harvest for their own consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Hayward area, it's fairly popular, but in other areas of the state, it's not very well known at all.
Let's go to Christina in Glenwood City. Hello, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I live between St. Croix and Dunn counties, and I'd love to utilize our natural vegetation, but I'm concerned about safety. So I'm wondering, are you aware of any groups in my area for beginning foragers?
You know, I don't know of any foraging clubs or groups anywhere.
Well, that's too bad. You should start some. I'm just kidding.
Well, the thing is, when I try to, then it ends up being like a class. And
yeah, you do have some wild food interpretive trail in Ogama, right?
Yes, I do. There's a campground there in Ogama where I set up an interpretive trail that's really convenient to use. Of course, it doesn't have all the plants in the state. There's about 60 different edible plants on that trail. And it's you can, for $5, someone can use the trail, or for $25 for a lifetime of using the trail, a lot of people come back repeatedly. It's a great way to learn the plants, and they're marked, and there's information about each one along the trail.
Mm. Well, we will check that out, Christina. I'm certainly going to check that out. That sounds great. Sam, we just have a minute to go. What are you going to forage for today?
Well, you know, you asked me what I'd put in my salad, and I've got a basswood tree in my yard that the leaves are just starting to open up. And a lot of people start foraging with dandelion greens, and that turns some people off. They're a little bit on the bitter side. But basswood leaves are a great place to start. And I'll probably get some more nettles today because it's nettle season.
Yeah, it sounds great. Well, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Sam Thayer is author of... The Forager's Harvest, A Guide to Identifying, Harvesting, and Preparing Edible Wild Plants and Nature's Garden. His website is foragersharvest.com. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Amanda Magnus for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Yes, I love them. Well, I could probably eat about a million of them. They're good on a pizza, on a steak, or...